Hi everyone, welcome back to another episode of Enablement Evolved. This week I'm really looking forward to this week's guest. I can only describe the first time we met as the scene out of Step Brothers when, after about 5 minutes of conversation, I could have easily said, did we just become best friends? On multiple different levels. But not only that, not only did I make a new best friend, she is a fantastically well-known person within the enablement world, exceptionally experienced. She is currently the VP of Sales Enablement and Proposal Management at EXL Health. My guest today is Stephanie Benavides. How are you, Stephanie?
I'm doing wonderful. And you pronounced my last name correctly, which is a real feat for most people. So thank you for that.
No problem. I'm a professional nowadays. I've done at least 20 episodes. I'm now fluent in surnames of all manners. So
you speak Spanish fluently, right? With your capabilities of ordering food in different countries in Spanish. I'm just gonna throw that in there. It's our own inside joke.
Yeah, I told Stephanie before we started a very unfortunate story of mine, which will not make it to the podcast. But if I ever meet anyone in person, I'm more than happy to tell you and embarrass myself. So, but yes, it was a very Spanish related story. But not only am I excited to have you on here because I'm a huge fan of yours, but I'm excited to talk about the subject that we decided upon because it's something that you're exceptionally passionate about yourself. And the subject we want to talk about is why enablement should have a seat at the leadership table. So I suppose my first question for you, Stephanie, is why do you believe enablement should have a seat at the executive table?
I think first and foremost, enablement needs to be looked at as a strategic function because it needs to be proactive in how you're doing your work. At the end of the day, I know others that are probably listening could probably say that their job ends up being more like firefighting than fire prevention. And the prevention start, I mean, even think about like health, right? You go to your doctor, you get your routine checkups, you get your teeth cleaned, you make sure you're healthy all around, you do the things to be healthy, you exercise, you keep your mind right. All those things add up to a healthy, holistic version of yourself. So a healthy version of sales is doing prevention on the front end, whether it's training, whether it's sales methodology, whether it's leading the charge for what is our business development strategies for the year. Let's start there and let's make sure that all of the things that we're trying to do this year align in terms of what sales enablement is supporting us with. I think random acts of sales enablement end up happening where, oh, I have an idea, shiny object, we're going to do this. But if there's an actual, call it calendaring, that meets the needs for product knowledge, process knowledge, technical methodology, all of those things. And if they're broken out into snackable things that people can dig into their tool of resources, that is really where I think you've got to look at the big picture of how you fit into that. And if you don't have kind of the chain of command and the buy-in from the top down to be able to do those things, it's going to be a running uphill, right, battle with boulders and things kind of rolling at you.
Yeah. And it's you know what is weird, right, is because we take a lot of these things for granted that we do, but see when you spell it out the way that you just did, we do so many things with so many different departments, and exactly to your point, like, it's easy for us to be trapped under a boulder or stuff like this if we don't have that alignment. And then we can either get pigeonholed or we can just get so way laid down in the smaller stuff that when we go and ask for that seat at the table, people are like, but why though? You just do that or you just do this or you just, or over here. Like one of the big things is, you're just training, right? Or you're just onboarding.
Right.
If you do just do those things, you'll never be seen as strategic, right? Or worthwhile of a seat at the executive table, right?
Absolutely. And I think I started to kind of go down the rabbit hole a little bit in terms of what I was trying to convey. But I think that that's the real obstacle course that we're faced with every day is all the asks, all of the things that come in and pop into, whether it's the sellers or the leaders, the frontline managers asking, hey, we need some objection handling and we need you to do that today. Hey, well, why do we need that? Are we reviewing calls or is something indicating as to why we need to do this program? Having some sort of objection, having some sort of desired outcome, what does success look like? Having those things end in mind helps to drive, I think, the bigger initiatives. And those bigger initiatives need to be conversed up, down, and around so that you have alignment with all of the people that sit amongst you, right? And so you've probably heard me say this multiple times, whether it's in LinkedIn posts or on other conversations, but I often say 90% of my job is stakeholder or change management. It literally is the biggest component of how things get done. And to me, that's strategic. That is being strategic, having those conversations and relationships, ensuring that the right things are being given focus and attention, and that the other things will come into play, but there's got to be a pragmatic and thoughtful approach versus those random acts of enablement.
Yeah, I love that. And I think the way that I try and quantify that, even with my stakeholders, is enablement's here to solve business problems, not team problems, right? Like, and you people sometimes they can't tell the difference, especially if you speak to like a frontline sales manager, for example. They really only care about their team, and I absolutely understand why. But just because they've got a "we need to work on objection handling," that's probably genuinely one of the most triggering phrases anyone could say to me, because I've never had anyone come to me and say, "We need to work on objection handling," and for that to actually be the problem, right? It's always something else.
I love that you said that sounds like a team problem. I don't even know if this is appropriate to do this, but I received a reel from my husband the other day, and it was about training, literally. And I'm going to turn down the volume because I don't want to, but it was basically around how do you know that it's a team problem or a leader problem versus a holistic problem? And it was, is it a knowledge gap, an importance gap, or an action gap? I actually think I'll send this to you afterwards because I think it's like a nice little resource. And then it says, okay, if it's a knowledge gap, it's a training problem, a teaching problem, or a talent problem. And if you answer yes to those things, if you not kind of attack those things, then actually you should say no. If you do answer yes to those things, then you have to go back and, basically set those things straight. If it's an importance gap, our expectations clear, communication is clear. What's the other thing? Anyways, I'm gonna send it to you because I was like, wow, this is powerful. And I think that I'm gonna use this and maybe put it in my own words versus even using a reel on Instagram to say, like, if you can say yes to any of those things, then we need to go back and do training, then we need to go back and do XYZ. But then you can engage us as a team. But there's other things as leaders within your own team that you need to be handling. Maybe objection handling is one of those things. Maybe it's not a bigger program that we need to build right this second for you, XYZ manager.
Yeah, and let me ask you a question on that, because I found myself like have a knee-jerk reaction to this, but I've seen a lot of enablers do it as well. It's like when enablement teams find out that a team leader or sales manager has done a training, they're like, "Yeah, but we didn't sign off on that." And it's like, "Well, hold on, right? Like, you're not the authority on every type of training that happens in the business." And I think sometimes, because you see that both ways, right? You see enablement be like, "Oh, I didn't sign off on this," but then at the same time, they don't like it when managers go, "We need training on this. Can you just do it, please?" So it's like a weird dichotomy that we can create, right?
My gosh, you definitely, gosh, I feel like you're digging into something that happened between one of the business development directors and myself, or senior managers, and he and I went back and forth about every training because he loves training and mentoring people. I actually have a really good relationship with him still. And we connect because I think we also had kind of that moment of like, did we just become best friends where we were so aligned in terms of how we approached our work and a RASi model of like, you do this, I do this, and you know, whatever. I said to him, more power to you. If you have the time, and I believe you're the leader of these 12 people, you should have the time of developing these people, right? I think that that is your number one job. It should not only be an enablement's job. It's your job just as much as it is mine. Can I give you some frameworks of potentially how your training could be formulated, like in terms of your framework and making sure that you square off on these three concepts? Sure. Can I give you some, you know, tips and tricks in terms of how to facilitate? Absolutely. But at the end of the day, you know, I'm not going to tell a leader that they can't train their people, because at the end of the day, that's extra bonus icing on top. But I think giving them some frameworks or tools and resources to make it the best that it can be, so it sticks, so that it's making sure that it's accountable and repeatable and scalable and all of those things, I think are absolutely important, but not the end all be all of, oh my gosh, you didn't engage us. How dare you? You can't do a training.
Right.
Why not?
Yeah. And because as I said, I felt like that sometimes as well. And I'd be like, well, what do you mean? Like, that's what we do. And I thought, well, actually, is it? Is it what we do? No, it's not, right? And I think it sort of brings me on to my next question for you is, like, what do you think enablement teams need to do to be seen as strategic? Like, so if you're speaking to enablers who are listening and they feel like they're fighting fires all the time, what do you think that they need to do to change that perception of just being the quote unquote training department?
I think a really smart way to handle intake is providing some sort of a scoping that goes along with it. So there's got to be some sort of a way to intake your request. So we're not just going to, like, you know, take your request at the water cooler while you're grabbing more coffee, or fly by Slack or Teams of like, we need this. Okay, well, slow down, slow your roll, time out. Like, let's actually track this, understand the urgency and priority. Who does this impact? What are you trying to solve for? And also, selfishly, for the enablement people, that gives you some, I would say, some knowledge into, are there trends in terms of who, what is being asked for? Let's look at those trends. What kind of volume are you working with? Are you getting hundreds of requests a month? Like, that's insane. But what can we mitigate there? So I think that's number one, is putting some sort of a SOP in place. Number two, using that information, going back to leaders to say, we've received seven requests on XYZ. Clearly, we need to build a program on this because something's not sticking, or something is clearly not working with the team if we've identified gaps in these areas. I would also say it's, again, relationship building, having syncs and one-on-ones with the right stakeholders on an ongoing basis, and making sure that you have a pulse on what you can expect. I think that's also helping to build out some of that strategic conversations.
Yeah, no, I like that. I think interestingly, I've in my first company enablement, we didn't have a formal intake form or anything like that. So we would just get requests on Slack or either via my boss, and she'd be like, "Oh, so and so has asked for this." So then in my stakeholder meetings, "Oh, can we do this?" And like I go on this sort of soapbox rant all the time, and one of my favorite parts now of where I am is what we added to it was the metric and the benchmark and what it ties to, right? 'Cause genuinely, I think people are going to be sick of hearing me saying it, but I genuinely think benchmarking is like the biggest miss of enablers, that it doesn't happen often enough. It just I didn't do it when I first started, right? But again, for me, if you have a benchmark of where we're at now, firstly, if you ask most leaders, right, again, do they
I
say,
have no idea.
and you go, well, why is it important? Right. So I boil mine down to, but in a very facetious questions, so what and says who? Right. We need to work on objection handling, says who? right? Or we closed, lost at this. So what? So what does that mean? So why are we doing it? Like, so it literally, it is, yes, it's very obtuse. I appreciate that. However, I don't, in order for me to start the discovery, I need you to answer those questions, right? So if it's,
I'm going to be very general here, generalize a lot. I would say 80% of companies are not doing that.
agreed. Yeah, 100%. 100%. I
And
know.
I don't even know, like, what are we trying to benchmark? What are the things that you want me to pull? I don't even know if we have stats for that. I'm like, well, that's first our first problem.
Yeah, I was having a conversation with someone earlier, and for me, if you have, let's just say they do have a metric in mind, whether that's objection handling or whatever, right? Whatever it is. But again, objection handling is a competency. It must is what's the metric that you're trying to move? What's the impact you're trying to make? So again, once you've got past that, like once you have the benchmark, then you have the target. So what do you want to improve it to? And then that already informs the timeline. So if you want it to move by 50%, you're not going to do that in a month. Right, you're going to do that in a quarter, you're going to do that in a year, right? So you've got to work back from there. And the thing is, these are such simple questions that we often miss out. And what happens is then is you then 6 months later, when you're, you know, whether it's a VP or whether it's a CRO, then goes, what have you impacted this year? Oh, well, we did a really good objection handling thing. And again, what's the question they're going to ask? So what, right? So they're going to ask the question on your behalf eventually, right? Or they're going to ask that question of you. And you don't want that question asked of you. You want to be asking it to 50 people before it comes to you, right? So we did these 10 programs. So what? So what we worked on was this because of that. And then you've got your feature, your benefit. You go back to selling yourself internally. But as I say, like, so many people don't benchmark, and when I say that, not just enablers, like sales leaders, they're flying. Like, don't get me wrong, lots of great salespeople go with gut reaction, and I'm not doubting. There's n and I, what I would caveat that with is, there's never no truth in that gut reaction, right? There's always something, but they're in the trenches. Our job is to be that strategic person and zoom out and go, okay. And I use this in this example all the time. I for people. Numerous times. In fact, I'll use a different one, right? I had a leader come to me recently, be like, we need to work on negotiation, right? Which is the AE version of objection handling, right? And I'll be like, says who? So, oh, we were not good at negotiating with procurement. Okay, so I go and look at the data. We closed, lost 80% of our deals within the first two stages. So actually, negotiation isn't the problem, right? Like, your problems are much earlier in the stage. I'm not saying that you don't need to work on it. What I'm saying is it's not a priority, right? Like,
Right.
and I think when you start having those conversations, and again, this kind of leads me into my next question, that's what makes you appear strategic, right?
Yeah, but what was the reaction from that person when you kind of gave them that aha moment? Were they speechless? Were they on the defense? What was the reaction?
The reaction was not quite defensive, but it was, they know better than me. They know their team better than me. And at that point, I go, okay, fine. I say, fine. Like, so, right, normally, if you're struggling to negotiate, you and I, we've had this conversation before, right? If you're struggling to negotiate and close, that means that they don't see a value. The reason they don't see a value is you don't understand the impact that your project's going to make. The reason you don't understand the impact is you've not got a good pain. Why? Because you've not done a good discovery, right? So, like, you and I have been backwards, forwards, up and inside sales processes for a long time. But then their actual reaction was, well, if you're not going to do it, I'll bring in an external company, was their actual answer, right? So I was like, cool. But the thing is for me, it's pick your battles, right? Like, you can only pick your battles, right? So, and don't get me.
I would love to see what that external partner then draws up in terms of their grandiose plans. And if they arrive at the same exact place that you do, and then maybe then the light bulb goes off and they're, $100,000,
Down.
less in the revenue in terms of, oh God, we just spent all this money and we arrived at the same exact recommendation.
Yeah, but I think that's the beauty of it, and I think with, and this is probably not going to win me any fans, but I think if I speak generally about sales leadership, we've got lots of people, in my opinion, I'll make that very clear, in my opinion, we've got lots of people in sales leadership that have been fast-tracked into that position and have never gone through this. You've also had people who have been promoted during COVID and during all these times or just before, right? So the world has changed so much throughout that they've probably not had the same support. They've probably just been told, close deals, survive, survive. So I get it. So what they're focusing on is the sharp end. However, the biggest impact they can make is at the start, but they don't want to slow down to speed up, which as a former sales leader, I know is a really difficult conversation to have. However, my job to work with you on that. So to go back to the enablement versus the business problem versus the team problem, you work with the negotiation. You and I work on the start. You and I, we put a program together on this. Why? Because the business stats or the region stats are telling us this is the problem. This is where the impact can be made. And I mean, every sales leader is different, right? And I think that's going back to those. This brings me on to my next question. I think one of the things that you're also passionate about is that stakeholder management, right? So if, say, for example, you're either promoted into the position as an enablement leader, or you join a new company as an enablement leader, how can you start off those internal relationships to move towards being seen as strategic and getting a seat at those leadership table, at the leadership table for those leadership stroke strategic type conversations?
Well, I mean, I would say I'm kind of currently in the thick of it right now, right? So I shared with you, started a new role about 9 weeks ago, and it's a large company with lots of complex layers, multiple business units. So there are other people like me in other functions of the business that I'm in healthcare, they're in insurance, or they're in other aspects. And we don't have to, but I see a lot of value in unifying how things are done in terms of proposal management, for example. Like, had some example conversations this week on, all right, guys, maybe we should standardize our playbook on how we intake, how we, if this is a bid, no bid, how do we advance, how do we upload into our system of choice, et cetera. I think right now, whether you're new in your position or you've been there for a while, ensuring that you have time with these people and laying out some sort of conversation of, I don't want to get like the flyby, like what you're working on. I mean, I care about those things, right? But like, how can I support you? You are my customer, or you are also sitting around me. What can I help impact in terms of the objectives of the first half of the year and beyond? What do we need to be working on for future state plans so that we're set up in the best way possible? Because if we continue to do these random acts of enablement, that's not going to do us any favors. So I like to put together a framework for, it's almost like timeline driven because I'm a timeline driven person. So the next 30 days, the next 60 days, the next 90 days, what do you want us to be working on? How are you involved? Not the like, what's in it for me, but like, why should you care? Well, it impacts this. That's how I try to approach a lot of those conversations. And then, what is current state and what does ideal or future state look like? What is the nirvana for you? Because obviously, I'm joining the company right now where I was told I should be elevating and professionalizing what we're doing today. Current state's great and it works, but in your mind, what does that nirvana look like? Because I think we can get blinders. I think in leadership, having looked at, we all have a lot of experience in what we've learned, what's good, what's bad, what's ugly. But I think between our community, there's a lot of idea sharing and best practices, right? But they don't always work for your unique organization. And so some of these stakeholders that I'm working with today have been at the organization for a very long time. And so I think that there's benefit to them bringing in kind of the historical context of how things work today and what good looks like and what they think attitudes would adopt. And then there's like the outside perspective. I continue to like go into these conversations like, new girl here, I'm pulling the new girl card, and here's some recommendations that I can make. And do you think that that would be adopted here? Do you think this would be a good goal to shoot for? And I think just getting those gut checks from people, reactions, that helps to drive initiatives. You need these people's help to drive initiatives, to drive adoption, and to drive, up, down, and across, like I said. So hopefully it's Friday afternoon. Hopefully that answered your question, because I'm not sure if I did.
No, you did. You did. You did. And actually, I want to touch on something that you mentioned around this current state, right? So we hear a lot in sales at this point in time, right? There's a status quo bias, right? And we've got the things, the books like The Jolt Effect, where we've gone from the fear of missing out to the fear of messing up, and people, you're losing more deals to no decision than to any other competitor. Putting that into the sales enablement lens or the revenue enablement lens, as if we're being 2023 about it. In my opinion, we seem to suffer a lot from that status quo bias within sales enablement. And you've gone into your point, you've gone into a massive company and you're playing that new girl card, and you've got lots of stakeholders been there for a long time. From an enablement point of view, or from a obviously you're at VP level, right? So you're dealing with the strategic of strategic conversations. How do you combat that status quo bias from the enablement point of view?
Can I ask some qualifying questions there? Like, in terms of that status quo bias, are you talking about technology, about programs, about methodology, or just all of it kind of lumped into one? Like,
I suppose, I mean, if there's an area that you want to focus on, then that's fine. I just mean in general, like, especially because what the reason that it sparked in my brain is you went, what they're doing now, it kind of works, right? So again, if you've got people that it can kind of works, and obviously that's subjective, right? I'm sure that is when you come in as a new person. So it kind of works how it is. You've got people that have been there for a long time. You know that, your big passion is change management. Any sort of change is uncomfortable. So it could be technology, it could be in general, like. But if it's kind of working, like how do you convince people that why don't we try this? How do you approach that conversation?
proof of concept.
Sure.
I
Okay.
think, to me, giving them a sneak peek into what good looks like is a component of that change management. Showing them what ideal state could look like. If you could automate this, if you could use Gen AI for this, if you could do this or this, how would that impact how efficient we can be as a team? Does that sound like something that our team could benefit from? And I think if you lay it out in, let's do it in a very pragmatic way. I'm not asking you to throw the baby out with the bathwater. I want you to do this and step like a crawl, walk, run, right? And so I think proof of concept is how you have to build out some of that. And change doesn't happen overnight. And I think also because change doesn't happen overnight, results don't show overnight all either. And that is not always inherently accepted. I think people want results now. We live in a very fast-paced world where immediate gratification, immediate results are expected. And if you can't deliver on those things, it's like, well, this isn't working. Well, how do you know it's not working? Like, we're at, this is a A to M step, and we're in step D. How do you know it's not working? Like, we are still making strides to get to that end point, and you can't just, assume that it's not working. We're making incremental steps, and I think that that's how you should approach when you're trying to overhaul something is breaking it down into wider accepted steps, right? You can't just like jump in day one and go, we're going from A to M.
I love that answer. And I love speaking to people like you, like Whitney Seek, or people are super passionate about change management and stakeholder management. I think certainly change management is something that I vastly underestimated coming into enablement, vastly, because
I think I did too. I did too, especially in startup world, because I think they're typically very fast-paced organizations, and so being thoughtful and pragmatic is not always easy. You know, you're expected to pivot now. And so change management ends up kind of taking an accelerated viewpoint.
Wonderful. I love hearing about it. So, Stephanie, I like to end every episode with one practical tip and one tactical tip. So, if you were to, if someone, an enabler's listening, and they want one practical thing they can do today to try and get a seat or have a like a leadership type conversation with the exec team, what would your practical tip be?
Practical tip. My practical tip would be to get on their calendar. Get on their calendar, and whether it's through their admin or through, because typically VPs and above have someone that you have to gatekeep through. And so if you can get on their calendar, and I think the extension of that practicality is you're gonna have to be prepared to share something of value, right? They're gonna wanna know that they're gonna learn something of value from you. But I also would go into that conversation with the mindset of collaboration, right? At the end of the day, you're trying to build a more collaborative, holistic team. And how is that person going to be instrumental in creating change for the team? The enablement team, for the greater sales org, and how can you be that catalyst for change with them? And they are your business partner at the end of the day. So having some sort of agenda that speaks to those things, I think, is going to help advance that meeting, and it won't get rescheduled or pushed out.
So, as soon as you said that, I was thinking of a company I was at where I actually really had to speak to the CRO because he put me in charge of like a project that he was to, had chosen to run. He literally went, "I'm running this project," and then he kept changing it, and I thought, "That's not a good sign."
But I mean, oh look, your favorite animal just ran and scurried across the fence behind me. I mean, I don't know if that's a really good practical tip, but I think knowing that you have to, if you want to have time with these people, you have to make the time and attack it from a way where it's of value to them. Why do they want to speak to you?
I didn't think of it like that. I just knew it was a bad sign.
I've had it happen too. I mean, that's where I think the learning lesson comes from. I can't tell you there was one individual that I think for longer than a quarter, I'm like, okay, I think that this is just done.
And what would your tactical tip be?
Maybe I'm confusing it. So tactical, practical, tactical,
Well, let's change it from tactical to strategic. Like, if a long term view to this, again, I suppose we've asked it. Like, to if an enabler, you're currently fighting fires all the time. What would your say if you have a quarter plan to just change that perception?
if you don't have an enablement charter that outlines what you're trying, your plan of attack, the resources, the projects, the objectives, the goals, the outcomes, the so what's, like if you have not outlined and presented that to your audience, you're never going to get buy-in. You cannot build all these things in a silo. So you have to build out some sort of a communication. And I would do it today. I would do it now. I would do it before the new year because all of that planning is happening now for next year. And so, if you've not documented any of that stuff before, well, gosh, I hope I've lit a fire under you to do that because that is going to get you the transparency, the collaboration, and the bigger picture for those people to understand what you're trying to achieve and why you're even at the organization and what's in it for them? How do they help to drive the results? They're part of your driving team. They're part of that. I'm thinking of like the NASCAR pit stop crew, right? Like you guys all got to do it together.
I appreciate it. I love that answer. Yeah, I think that's really good. So just before we finally wrap up, Stephanie, for anyone who I'm sure, I don't want to say anyone, everyone who's enjoyed listening to the ramblings of Stephanie Benavides, if they wanted to reach
Ramblings. It's definitely been
out.
ramblings today, for sure. I don't know if you saw my cup. I'm going to keep everyone guessing.
Yes, what's let's not discuss what's in that cup today. If someone wanted to reach out to pick your brain on any of this, or just to consume more of your content, what's the best way to get in contact with you?
Well, I'm always on LinkedIn, not as often as I'd like to be these days, just because this new job is definitely keeping me very busy. But I do check my messages there all the time. You can reach me there. My email is on my contact information. So drop me a line, connect with me. I'm always here to help other enablers. And I don't think that you can learn in a vacuum. And I don't think you can just learn from books. I think you have to learn from others in this space. We all bring a lot of unique opinions and experiences and history. And I am definitely someone who has tapped people on the shoulder, and I wanted to be able to do the same for the growing community. So tap away.
I love that. But I'd just like to finish that with a little story. When you say that you like helping other people, I can speak to that personally because you recommended me for a job before we ever even spoke,
Yeah.
which was amazing, and not many other people got the way to do that. And it was a very strange conversation. So someone reached out and went, "Oh, we have this job, and I think you'd be perfect, or you were recommended." And I was like, "Oh, who was I recommended by?" And he said, "Oh, Stephanie Benavides." And I was like, "Really?" Like, I think we'd like spoken a little bit on LinkedIn, but we have obviously we hadn't spoken or anything. But I think that's just is a testament to you stand by your word even before you and I'd even had a conversation. You put me forward for it, so I can't say that you walk your talk, right? That's very, very true. But that brings us to the end of another episode of Enablement Evolved. Stephanie, thank you so much, and I shall speak
Thank
to
you. Well, thanks for having me, and